Welcome to Classical 95.9 WCRI's Conducting Conversations with your host, Mike Maino. 1 hour of music and conversation with notable people in the arts, bringing you the stories of how music has impacted their lives. The show will give a behind-the-scenes look at the guest's background, interests, or special project.
Conducting Conversations is brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, from sheet music and brand-name instruments to rentals, repairs, lessons, and more. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.
And now here's your host, Mike Maino.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Conducting Conversations. Tonight, it's a pleasure to welcome back to our program the world-famous and world-renowned good-looking guy, Ray Brown, is here. Welcome back, Ray.
Wow, is there another guy with that name? Actually, there are quite a few of them, I think.
But you're our Ray Brown.
That's right, I'm your Ray Brown, so that counts.
The Bird Show, I like that. I love birds.
Ray Brown's Talking Birds.
There's something that's familiar to our audience. It's the Ray Brown opener. And Ray, it's been a while, a couple of years.
Yeah, you say it's a couple of years, so I guess I'll take your word for it, Mike.
Yeah, I looked it up. It was actually March 21st, 2021 was the last time we had you on the program. But you are on our airwaves every week, as most of our listeners know, with a show called Ray Brown's Talking Birds. And that airs on Saturday mornings here on WCRI. And you actually record the show when? What day of the week?
We do the show live on Sunday mornings.
Sunday mornings.
Sunday mornings from 9:30 to 10. Yeah.
And then we replay that show the following Saturday is the way it works here on WCRI. So,
right.
So people get to hear you and get to hear the stories. And you are on show. Now, this program is also pre-recorded. We're not fooling anybody. It's not really Sunday night here. But you're on show 942. That's a lot of shows.
That is. I keep recounting to see if maybe there's been a mistake somewhere. And it's really only 42 or something. But it is 942, yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. It is amazing to me. But, you know, we're still having fun doing it and getting some pretty good feedback. So here we go. People keep saying we're going to get to 1,000, so we'll see.
Well, I think that absolutely. I mean, that's the same goal for this program also. We're not that far behind you, and we have had... we're at, 850-ish or something like that.
Wow, you're catching up.
Yeah, and it's I don't think it's going to actually catch you, but it might get closer. The interesting thing is that frequently I have two or three guests, as you do on your program. So you take that number of 900 or 800 or whatever it is between the two of us, multiply that by sometimes two or three guests a week, and we've really talked to thousands of people. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's really, really true. And I think of our Mike O'Connor from the Birdwatchers store on the Cape, because he's been on, you know, virtually every show with me since the beginning. So just by himself, he's been on hundreds of times.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what we've talked about all those times, but we still keep doing it.
It's amazing how people like you and I continue to find things to talk about. But
yeah, well, it helps to have somebody like Mike, too, because he comes up with the topics for his segment, which is great. And he's still coming up with them.
There you go. Now, the program Talking Birds, what made you decide to start this? That's, I would think, you know, a strong, good-looking, central casting, marine-looking kind of guy like yourself would have done a show on physical fitness or something. But
I'm holding up a photo here, folks, that Mike is looking at. That's where he's getting that description from. the story is that I was doing a weekend talk show on WBZ Radio in Boston many years ago. I'd rather not say how many. I haven't figured it out, and I don't want to.
Over 10.
Oh, yeah, definitely over 10. Anyway, so, you know, we would talk, we would have all kinds of different topics that would come up. And one day the topic of birding or bird watching came up. This is long enough ago, Mike, that I don't even remember if I introduced the topic or if a caller did. But we got bombarded with phone calls about birding and bird watching. And it was quite a surprise to me. And it just made me think, you know, that this topic deserves to, you know, be its own show. And I really filed that idea away for quite a long time. And then one day I thought, you know, I'm going to try to put something together. And I made a little format and did a little demo show, and I got one station to carry it. And then just, you know, expanded it from there. And as you pointed out, 942 times.
There you go. Done it. And and sponsors that that help support the program, obviously. A lot of loyal sponsors that you have that I've noticed have been on for years.
That's really true. We're lucky to say. In fact, Mike O'Connor's Birdwatcher store is also a sponsor, as well as him being a contributor, you know, as a guest on the show. So he's been supporting the show since the beginning. And then we have Birds and Beans Coffee, which is a recurring sponsor of ours. They sell this shade-grown coffee that helps preserve the tropical habitat for birds. And we have Vortex Optics, which is a great binocular and scope maker. They've been on with us for quite a while right now. And another one is Beautio Books, and they're an online bookseller specializing in bird and nature titles. They're not going to keep on with us because they've decided to sell their business.
Wow.
So if anybody is interested in starting an online bookstore, here's your chance, because Beautio Books for sale. Maybe a new owner will stay on with us. We'll see, but they've been a loyal supporter for quite a while.
Well,
too.
Maybe we'll find someone listening today to pick up and take it over. We've been fortunate here at WCRI and conducting conversations to have Robert's Musical Instruments with us for many, many years, and we appreciate their help. You know, we teased people right at the beginning of the show with that little introduction of yours. Let's take a moment to play the whole song, Rockin' Robin.
Singing his song, all the little birds on Jaybird Street love to hear the robin go tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' Robin,
tweet, tweet,
rockin' Robin,
tweet, tweet,
rockin' Robin,
tweet,
tweet, tweet, tweet. Blow, rockin' Robin, 'cause we're really gonna rock up tonight.
Tweet, tweet, tweet.
Every little swallow, every chickadee, every little bird in the tall oak tree, the wise old owl, the big black crow, flap of their wings, sing and go, bird, go. Rockin' Robin,
tweet, tweet,
rock, 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 rockin' Robin,
tweet, tweet,
go, rockin' Robin, 'cause we're really gonna rock tonight. And it was grand. They started going steady, and bless my soul, he out popped the buzzard and the Oreo. He rocks in the treetop all day long, popping and a popping and a singing his song. All the little birds on Jaybird Street love to hear the robin go tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' Robin,
tweet, tweet,
rockin' Robin,
tweet, tweet,
rockin' Robin,
tweet, tweet, tweet.
Blow, rockin' Robin, 'cause we're really gonna rock tonight.
Tweet, tweet, rock.
Well, the pretty little raven at the birdman stand taught him how to do the bop, and it was grand. They started going steady, and bless my soul, he out-bopped the buzzard and the Oreo. He rocks in the treetop all the day long, hopping and a-bopping and a-singing his song. All the little birds on Jaybird Street love to hear the robin go tweet, tweet, tweet.
rockin' Robin. Rockin' Robin. Low rockin' Robin, 'cause we're really gonna rock tonight.
Rockin' Robin, the name of the song, and I presume a lot of people talk to you about what I might call, as a layperson, everyday birds like robins. I consider that pretty much everywhere, certainly in our listening area, robins are very prolific, and people sometimes, I'm sure, wonder about their reactions and their actions. I noticed just a week or so ago, two robins fighting like crazy. I think they were fighting, because I'm not up on robin habits. But what would cause birds to fight like that, two of the same species?
The first thing I think about is mates and territory. You know, especially if this was in the springtime, yeah, that would be likely to be the case, because competition is pretty fierce for both of those things. It could also be over food as well.
Yeah.
But when there's really fighting like that going on, I think there's a good chance that either fighting over a mate or a potential mate or territory would be a good answer.
So my wife and I are sitting on our patio. We live in downtown Providence, but we have a little yard there. We're an inner city yard space right in the heart of Brown University. So because we have this patch of grass, it's probably, 50 feet long by 30 feet wide. As we look at our patio, birds come a lot and hang around. And we have, of course, our pair of mourning doves that have claimed our home as theirs. And and we noticed them doing something similar a couple weeks ago. But it was a pair that was obviously a couple. And they're standing around on a branch looking at us, and all of a sudden one turns to the other, starts flapping their wings, and but face to face. And we had never seen that before either. We thought maybe that people were just getting tired, the birds are getting tired of American politics.
If they were paired like that, I wonder if that was some kind of a mating ritual. I don't know about mating rituals for mourning doves, but sounds like that might have been the case there.
Well, what we noticed was the female was gathering sticks and trying to build a nest on one of our windowsills up on the second level, and the male was appearing to have no part of that. So maybe they had a disagreement on where they wanted to live.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, there's so many variations, but in many cases, the male birds don't do a heck of a lot when it comes to nest building and such. There are some males that do and some that actually take turns brooding the eggs as well. But for a lot of species, the males don't do much at all. They look good.
Right. One of the things I wanted to cover with you today is people will come up to me and talk about your program and mention that you advertise bird feeders and so forth. And there's a company that you talk about all the time. And people say to me, I always throw a lot of bread out for my birds, and I don't have a bird feeder. And then other people will say, well, that's not good to do. You have any opinion on that?
I would say generally it is not good to do. In fact, there's a thing called angel wing that affects some birds, I think especially ducks, and it's been seen in pond ducks a lot, where eating bread, and I'm not sure how definitively this has been researched, but the evidence seems to suggest that eating things like bread, whatever that is in the ingredients of bread, can really cause some metabolic problem for birds. And in ducks, this thing called angel wing will mean that their wings will sort of develop a kind of a crooked shape to them, and as a result they can't fly.
Huh.
So angel wing. So that's one of the reasons why feeding bread is discouraged. And I think just generally it's not a very nutritional
right
food for birds. It's not a dense nutrient that birds need. You know, they'll eating insects, depending on what kind of bird it is, insects or seeds that are pretty dense in nutrients, and bread, not so much.
Well, if you're listening and you have any questions about that, you can certainly go to one of our clients, Wild Birds Unlimited in Warwick,
yeah.
And they'll be able to give you specific answers and tell you what kind of birds like what kind of food. So check that out. That's another one of our sponsors of your program, Ray.
And, yeah, wonderful. There's a great organization. I know they're all over the country. They do some good stuff.
Yep, they do. You know, people will say to me, ask about your background. In other words, were you educated in this field? But you've kind of explained that, where you said it just kind of happened when you were at BZ back in the day. Have you ever since gone on to do any further study about birds or birding?
One thing I did, Mass Audubon, Massachusetts Audubon, has a program called the Birders Certificate Program. And I did take that course, this is 3 or 4, maybe 5 years ago now, that they do up at a place called Joppa Flats, up in the Newburyport area in Massachusetts. And it's a course that goes for several months, just once a week, if I recall correctly, and involves a couple hours of classroom work where you study about bird anatomy, bird migration, systemics, morphology of birds, and then there was a field portion. We would go out in the field up there and look for birds for a couple of hours with a couple of expert guides. That's a program that's still going on. If you have folks listening in Massachusetts, well, it's not that far from Rhode Island. It's a great program. Birder Certificate Program is called, through Mass Audubon. So that's really the one real course that I have taken, you know, and I study a lot in terms of reading bird books and taking some of the smaller courses from Cornell Lab of Ornithology. They have dozens of courses in every aspect of birding, and many of them are free, by the way, so it's something I would recommend for anybody who wants to learn more. If you check out Cornell Lab, just wonderful stuff available there. They have some courses that involve a fee, but as I say, many of them are free.
Well, you should check that out if you're interested in that. We're going to take a little break here in a moment and come back with some more information from Ray Brown. Ray, I'm not sure if you know this, but all my life I have sung in a quartet, an a cappella quartet, and had the good fortune to travel around the world. And I thought I'd play a song by another quartet that has to do with birds. And this is a group you might have heard of. They're called the Beatles.
The what? Oh, Beatles. Yeah, I think. And I know about your singing, too, Mike. So, yeah, it's great.
All right, let's listen to Blackbird and then take a short break, and we'll be back.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly. Into the line of a dark black night. bird fly, black bird fly, into the light of a dark black night. Singing in the dead of night, take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life you were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
Ray Brown's Talking Birds is the subject of tonight's Conducting Conversations. I'm Mike Maino, very pleased to be sitting with Ray and talking about, of course, birds. Now, that last song we played before the break was Blackbird by the Beatles. Blackbirds, to me, are what I call blackbirds. They're actually crows. I'm probably mixed up, right?
There's yeah, crows difference. Are not actually blackbirds. It's a little bit tricky. You know, some of the birds' names that we have here were sort of mistranslated from Europe when the settlers came over. They'd see a black bird and obviously call it a blackbird, but it turns out they were actually different species from the blackbirds of Europe. So we have the red-winged blackbird here, for example, and yellow-headed blackbird and some others. You know, totally different species from Europe, and it's kind of like our American robin. The settlers call that bird the robin because it reminded them of a bird back in Europe, the robin. Totally unrelated birds. They just happen to have some similar coloring. So we call this bird the robin when it's actually a thrush. It's related more to wood thrushes and hermit thrushes and veeries. Some have suggested we should call it the black-headed thrush instead of American robin. It would be a more accurate way to describe it. Crows are in a different family, the corvid family, among the most intelligent of birds. Corvids, crows and ravens, magpies and jays, all in that corvid family. So they're not actually blackbirds, but they are black
in color.
Exactly.
Well, I noticed that, as I mentioned, living in downtown Providence, and we live up on College Hill, which we can actually look down upon the city. And we have some big trees around us. And I would notice, particularly in the early, very early spring, that hundreds, if not thousands, of crows would come and sit on the treetops, certainly make a mess of our automobiles and everything else. But it was unbelievable. Sometimes it seemed like the sky would completely be filled with them. And now they're gone. So were we a stop along the way?
Yeah, you know, crows do these big, this is in the wintertime, did you say?
Yeah, it was in the winter and very early spring, I think, like March, you know, that type of thing.
Sure. So they do tend to form in these big roosts, coming from all different directions and coming together, and then splitting up again as the spring comes along. There are some incredibly gigantic crow roosts. There's a group up on the North Shore in Massachusetts called the Crow Patrol, and they have made a whole big hobby out of watching the crow roosts there that are sometimes in the many tens of thousands of birds. And they'll roost, one of the big roosts there is right under the bridge going across the Merrimack River on the interstate. I guess that's 95.
Yeah.
Or is it 495? Yeah. And these crows are coming, as I say, from all different directions and joining in these great communal roosts. And they produce videos about this that are quite elaborate.
Yeah.
And some of the folks from there actually travel to different places There are several places around the country that feature these enormous roosts, and a bunch up in southern Canada as well. So, yeah, they can be pretty dramatic.
Pretty amazing, it really is, that many of them. And my wife is not a big fan because of the mess they make. So occasionally, the other thing I found is they don't seem to be bothered by people walking around or traffic or whatever. However, if I clap, they all take off. I don't know if that sounds like a gunshot to them or what, but they...
I'm not sure what it sounds like to them either, other than something very sharp and loud and giving them the thought to move away. When you talk about them not paying attention, there's quite a bit of research showing that if you did something to one of those crows, if you threw something at it or that sort of thing, or really tried to harass it, the crows will remember. And they've demonstrated this. If there is somebody that they recognize, they will follow them along and harass them back.
Huh.
Because, another thing amazing about birds, about many birds, is incredible memory that they have. There's another corvid relative that's a western bird, really in the western mountains, called a Clark's nutcracker. Well, this bird can gather seeds in the fall and store them, literally hundreds if not thousands of them, and can remember virtually every single one that it is hidden somewhere.
Huh.
So they have these feats of memory that are way beyond anything that that humans can do. Except now we've got AI, so we can do that.
It's an amazing story. We're going to go to another song, and this one has a question involved for me also. This is Manhattan Transfer singing Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square, and I'll ask you the question after we listen.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. That certain night, the night we met, there was magic abroad. In the air, there were angels dining at the Ritz, and a nightingale sang in Berkeley Square. I may be right,
I may be wrong,
but I'm perfectly willing to swear that when you turned and smiled at me, a nightingale sang in Berkeley Square. Ooh.
The moon that lingered over London town, poor puzzled moon, he wore a frown.
Oh, how could he know we two were so in love? Upside down, the streets of town were paved with stars. It was such a romantic affair. And as we kissed and said goodbye, a nightingale sang. Nightingale sang.
The streets of town
were paved with stars.
It was such a romantic affair. And as we kissed and said goodbye, a nightingale sang in Berkeley Square.
So, Ray, that might be another case of Manhattan Transfer singing about a nightingale sang in Berkeley Square. Now, I've been to Berkeley Square in London, and I didn't see any nightingales.
I haven't been there. I've been to Trafalgar Square, but I didn't see any nightingales there either.
Right. Now, a nightingale is one of those birds, like you talked about, different in Europe than America, perhaps? Or, I mean, that's not the same thing.
You know, I think we have one nightingale species here in the U.S. that is a direct relative of the nightingale in Europe. The exact name of it is escaping me for a moment. But we do have one nightingale species here that is a close relative. Yeah.
Right. Well, it's known for making beautiful music, but I haven't heard a lot of birds around here that make beautiful music. Maybe I'm not listening to the right people.
Well, there are some. One example that I think of immediately is the wood thrush, which is many people think is one of the most beautiful singers anywhere. It really has a flute-like quality to its song. Quite beautiful. Others think the hermit thrush, which has a similar song, is an even more beautiful singer. So those are a couple, and there are some others that have, if not as beautiful, really elaborate songs. The brown thrasher is one, and by some measurements, it's said that this bird has a repertoire of almost 1,000 songs, amazing variations and very complex. Of course, the northern mockingbird is one that can mimic almost anything. So if it hears a wood thrush singing, it can kind of sing like a wood thrush. It can also do the same thing if it hears a truck horn. It can mimic a truck horn. The technical name of the bird is Mimus polyglottis, which means essentially it can mimic almost anything.
Wow.
And it really does. There's another bird called the gray catbird, which is a relative of the mockingbird, and it's kind of like maybe a second-tier mockingbird. It can also do a lot of imitations, not quite on the level of mockingbird, but still pretty elaborate things.
Amazing.
And even some of the, you know, the really, really common birds like the house sparrow, which is not a favorite of many people. It's an introduced European bird and has caused, the destruction almost of other bird species here because it takes over other birds' nests. It has what we hear is kind of a not very musical chirp. But what's interesting is if you slow down a recording of these birds, you can hear amazing complexity in their songs. And there are some researchers who've done a lot of study on this who think that the birds maybe hear that song in that slowed down kind of way. So they hear the nuances and the complexities of the song that we don't hear at all. We just hear chirp, 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 and but there's a lot more going on in there. And bird song in general is fascinating because birds have, instead of a larynx like we have, they have a syrinx, most birds, which means they have a double voice box. So they can actually harmonize with themselves.
I need one of those.
Yeah, I think Cornell Lab, you may be able to get one through there. I'm not sure. You could check. They have everything else, so maybe they have that. But it's quite remarkable, and it's part of the reason that a mockingbird can sing such complex songs. And it's also the reason, for example, a northern cardinal, that's a bird most people are familiar with, and their typical song involves this kind of upward sweeping whistle at the beginning. And it turns out the research has shown that when they do that whistle, it's kind of something like that. They're actually doing that with both sides of their voice box, so that one side is doing the first second or so, and then the other voice box picks up from there and completes that sweep. And when they do it, it sounds perfectly aligned, so that there's no break in between, which is a remarkable thing. Somehow it does this maybe tiny overlap so that you can't tell when it switches from one side to the other. It's just another of the many amazing adaptations of birds.
Amazing things we find out. We need to take another break, so we're going to just quickly go to a Mary Poppins tune called Feed the Birds by Julie Andrews. Take the break, and we'll be back with more of Ray Brown.
Early each day to the steps of St. Paul's, the little old bird woman comes in her own special way. Come feed the little birds, show them you care, and you'll be glad if you do. Their young ones are hungry, their nests are so bare, all it takes is tuppence from you. The birds, tuppence a bag, tuppence, tuppence, tuppence a bag. Feed the birds, that's what she cries, while overhead her birds fill the skies. All around the cathedral, the saints and apostles look down as she sells her wares. Although you can't see it, you know they are smiling each time someone shows. She's calling to you. Feed the birds, tuppence a bag, tuppence, tuppence, tuppence a bag. listen, listen, she's calling to you. Feed the birds, tuppence a bag, tuppence, tuppence, tuppence a
Ray Brown's Talking Birds is the subject of tonight's Conducting Conversations. I'm Mike Mano, and Ray and I have been talking about lots of different things to do with birds, from let's see, I call them flocks and of crows, and you called them a
murder.
A murder of crows. Right, that's right. From Edgar Allan Poe, if I'm not mistaken. He mentions that in one of his books. But there's amazing things about birds. We just talked about nightingales and singing birds and the cardinal and lots of things we've been talking about. We've got a few minutes left to kind of wrap it up, and I just want to, first off, I don't think I said thank you for bringing a subject to our listeners that they would normally never have a chance to hear anywhere else. So we have that unique ability to be able to reach out to people and make them think about something that they might not have thought about. They see the bluebird, they see the blue jay, the robin as we call it, the seagulls or pigeons or whatever it is, and they don't think anything about them. But you've gone beyond that, so thanks for doing that.
Well, it's indeed my pleasure. You know, It's so wonderful to help sort of help people discover what a world it is when you think about birds, even in terms of just how many bird species there are. We have close to 1,000 species of birds in North America, and around the world, something like 11,000 species.
That's species, and then thousands, and if not millions, of each of the species, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, billions.
Yeah.
Sadly, we're also getting rid of billions through various things that we're doing, unfortunately, from birds crashing into buildings and windows and towers, certainly not radio towers, but TV towers and cell phone towers and so on, being preyed upon by all kinds of predators, cats included. There's so many challenges that birds face. We've lost a very, very large percentage of birds over the past 30 years or so. Fortunately, there are lots of great organizations that are trying to protect birds, Cornell being one of them, is the American Bird Conservancy, American Birding Association, the Nature Conservancy, and a number of others. But I think I went off the topic of what you just asked me. That probably went
well. I think it's a good topic that you kind of brought us to. I know that here, Jamie Jones, our general manager, has a bird feeder right outside the office window, and we attract all kinds of different species. And for a while, they were bumping into the window, and What saved us there was something pretty simple that maybe people can take a tip from. This, we put we just put the screen down, and the screen was enough for them to see that it wasn't, you know, instead of the glass. So the storm window screen, that type of thing. And then on the glass doors that we have here, he bought a kind of a white mesh, if you will, that went over the glass so that they would see that and not be bumping into it anymore, because they were crashing into it for a while.
Yeah, well, it's a good thing that you're doing there. I mean, there are literally billions of birds killed every year by crashing into windows. And, you know, the main reason is that the birds see, as you're kind of suggesting, they're seeing this reflection of the sky behind them. So, of course, they think they're flying through open sky. Instead, they're crashing into the window. So anything you can put on a window that breaks up that reflection is really the key. That mesh that you were describing, there is one way. There's a number of companies that make various kinds of decals and such that you can put on the windows too. There's a company called Feather Friendly in Toronto, and we give away some of their window protection kits, and they're pretty effective. And it turns out for those kinds of things, the key to them is making sure you have enough of them on your window, because if there are big spaces in between, the birds will see those open spaces and try to fly right through. So there's actually a formula. If you went to Feather Friendly's website, for example, you could see the formula of just how that works and make sure the window really effectively deters the birds from crashing. And the other thing that I think people forget is when you put those things on, you need to put them on the outside of the window, not the inside. Because if you put them on the inside, you'll still have that reflection effect from the window. So the things need to be on the outside, but they can make a tremendous difference. You know, many of the buildings now in a lot of our cities, I know New York has just introduced something where bird-friendly glass has to be incorporated into new building construction and even major remodeling of buildings to prevent these bird crashes. Because, you know, birds die by crashing into our windows in our houses, as kind of you're describing with this with the radio station, but also on skyscrapers,
where they
get disoriented by the lights of the skyscrapers and go flying in circles and ultimately crash. So there's a kind of fritillated glass that is being used in a lot of buildings now that has kind of a built-in effect, so the birds see these little dots inside the glass, virtually invisible to people, but birds can see them, so they know it's not open sky.
So there you go. If you have questions about this, Ray, is there a way people can go to a website or something to communicate with you if they see something that they'd like to get further information about?
Sure. Our website is talkinbirds.com. And the tricky part is there's no G, so it's talkinbirds.com. So, you can certainly get in touch with us pretty easily that way. You could send me an email at ray@talkinbirds.com. And we also do Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, so you can contact us that way. So quite a few different ways, and we love to hear from folks about anything. I might just put in a little plug too, Mike, for something that we call audio postcards. And this is something that one of our team members, Freya McGregor, started. She'll just go out looking at birds and she'll do a little narration of what she's seeing and picking up a little bird sound, then making a file and sending it to us, 30 seconds to a minute. And we play them on the air. So she's all over the place looking at birds all over the world, pretty much. And then we started inviting listeners to do this. So we're getting audio postcards every week from listeners all over. Excellent. Describing birds that they're seeing, getting a little bit of the bird sounds. So they're become a regular feature of our show. So anybody who'd like to make one of those audio postcards,
excellent.
We'd love to get them.
Well, Ray, I want to thank you so much for your time and being with us. And this is one of those subjects we could go on and on for hours. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but it's great to I'm seeing you again through Zoom, and we apologize to the audience if the sound quality isn't quite what it should be, but at least we have the knowledge and all of the comments Ray's been able to make. Thanks for doing this, Ray.
My pleasure indeed, Mike, and great to see you again.
Nice to be with you. And the rest of you, we'll see you next time on Conducting Conversations.
Conducting Conversations was brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, using music and the arts to keep your child educated, entertained, and having fun. Robert's Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.